वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमम् देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासम् ततो जयमुदीरयत् नष्टप्रायेषु अभद्रेषु नित्यं भागवत सेवया भागवती उत्तमश्लोके भक्तिर्भवती नैष्ठिकी. This morning we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 6, entitled The Killing of the Demon Putana, text number 13. Nisha,
Nisha
Charitam,
Charitam
Vyatita,
Vyatita
Stana,
Stana
Vyasur,
Vyasur
Vyadaya,
Vyadaya
Keshangsh,
Keshangsh
Charanao,
Charanao
Bhujao,
Bhujao
Api,
Api
Prasaya,
Prasaya
Goshte,
Goshte
Nijarupam,
Nijarupam
Hastita,
Hastita
Vajrahato,
Vajrahato
Vrita,
Vrita
Ivapatan,
Ivapatan
Nripa,
Nripa
Nishachartitam vyatitastana vyasur Nishachartitam vyatitastana vyasur
Nishachartitam vyatitastana vyasur
Vyadaya keshams charana bhujavapi Vyadaya keshams charana bhujavapi Prasaya goshte nijarupamastita Prasaya goshte nijarupamastita
Prasaya goshte nijarupamastita
Vajrahato vritta iva patanripa Vajrahato vritta iva patanripa The Rakshasi. Itham. In this way. Vyatitastana. Being severely aggrieved. Because of pressure on her breast. Vyasuhu. Lost her life. Vyadaya. Opening her mouth wide. Keshan, bunch of hairs. Charanao, her two legs. Bhujao, her two hands. Api, also. Prasarya, expanding. Goshte, in the pasturing ground. Nijarupam astita, remained in her original demoniac form. Vajra ahataha,
killed by the thunderbolt of Indra.
Vritraha, Vritrasura,
Eva,
as if.
Apatat, fell down. Nirpa, O King. Translation. In this way, the demon Putana, very much aggrieved because her breast was being attacked by Krishna, lost her life. O King Parikshit, opening her mouth wide and spreading her arms, legs, and hair, she fell down in the pasturing ground in her original form as a Rakshasi, as Vritrasura had fallen when killed by the thunderbolt of Indra, purport by Srila Prabhupada. Putana was a great Rakshasi who knew the art of covering her original form by mystic power. But when she was killed, her mystic power could not hide her, and she appeared in her original form. So Putana was punished for her sinful activities by Lord Krishna, and specifically her breast was attacked. Krishna bit upon her nipple, gave great pressure. I think any part of the body that Krishna puts great pressure on would kill you. But in this particular instance, Putana wanted to kill him by giving him her milk, or giving him her breast as a mother gives her breast to give milk. Therefore, she was treated as a mother, and although she was killed by Krishna, there is a happy ending to the story, because Putana attained liberation. And we'll learn later on how the cowherd men cut her body up into pieces. It was like a 12-mile long great tree that you could use for firewood. So there was a lot of body there to burn. But when they burned her body, it was very, very fragrant. And therefore, we can understand that after the touch of Krishna's mouth, she became completely purified, just like Kaliya became purified by feeling the touch of Krishna's feet. And there are many instances of demons who were killed by Krishna, just like there's a nice story about Nrisingadev. Hiranyakashipu, he fought with Nrisingadev, and we see the awful vision or the awful sight of Tanubrinam, the nails of Nrisingadev ripping open the abdomen and placing the entrails, the guts, around his mane, around his head and hair, and wearing it as a garland with blood dripping, and we think, oh, how horrible, or at least visitors to the temple do. Why, this cultivator, watch. But the fact is that the moment Nrisingadev touched Hiranyakashipu, he became purified of all his sins, and therefore he felt no pain at all. He felt as a devotee would feel, aslishava padartam pinastumam. Either you embrace me or you trample me down with your feet. It is both ecstatic. So Hiranyakashipu felt the ecstatic lila of being killed by Krishna. He did not feel pain. Putana also, although she did go through a little pain, but that pain purified her. Just like a Kshatriya. Kshatriya goes into battle, and a Kshatriya fights, and he dies. But as Krishna tells Arjuna, either you will die and attain the heavenly planets, or you'll be victorious and rule over the world. So for a Kshatriya, it is not a bad thing to die in battle, especially for a religious cause, for a dharmic yudha, a war, a spiritual war, a religious war, especially one where you have been directly instructed by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. There's no doubt in your mind at all. The highest authority has not only sanctioned you, but ordered you to do something, in this case, fight. So one was purified by that. Putana was a mystic. She could change her form, but that apparition, that illusory form that she manifest, was due to her power. And when she died, the power was finished, and so she returned to her original form as a Rakshasi, and she fell into the pasturing ground with a big thud, just as Vritrasura had fallen down very heavily on the ground. O King Parikshit, when the gigantic body of Putana fell to the ground, it smashed all the trees within a limit of 12 miles. Appearing in a gigantic body, she was certainly extraordinary. This is one of those understatements in the Bhagavatam. Certainly extraordinary, to say the least. I think anybody with a 10-foot body would be amazing, but you know, Lord Chaitanya was something like 7 foot, and he was, you know, very exceptional personality. But 12 miles long, it's one of those, is that an allegory? How can we believe that mythology? Well, it says 12 miles long, gigantic body, certainly extraordinary. Because of the grievous hurt imposed upon her by Krishna sucking her breast, Putana, while dying, not only left the room, may I leave the room, please, but abandoned the village and fell down in the pasturing ground in her gigantic body. So it was like, you know, someone, you got a balloon or something, and someone pops the balloon, and you know, it immediately flies somewhere, having all the air let out of it. So Putana was the Rakshasi's mouth was full of teeth, each resembling the front of a plow. Oh, that's an interesting description. Many of you ever seen a plow before? Only if you've been to India and been in the villages. I don't think you see such animals here, but anyway. Tractors have plows, but it's not what it's talking about here. It's a plow that, you know, it has a handle pulled by a horse, and there's one furrow that digs the earth, and so that blade of the plow, I think they call it furrow, right? F-U-R-R-O-W, furrow. Is that correct? Anybody know? Okay. So that blade, the Rakshasi's mouth was full of teeth, each resembling the front of a plow. Her nostrils were deep and like mountain caves, and her breast resembled big slabs of stone fallen from a hill. Her scattered hair was the color of copper. The sockets of her eyes appeared like deep blind wells. Her fearful thighs resembled the banks of a river. Her arms, legs, and feet seemed like bridges. And her abdomen appeared like a dried up lake. The hearts, ears, and heads of the coward men and women were already shot. The hearts, ears, and heads of the coward men and women were already shocked by the Rakshasi's screaming. And when they saw the fierce wonder of her body, they were even more frightened. Without fear, the child Krishna was playing on the upper portion of Putana Rakshasi's breast. And when the gopis saw the child's wonderful activities, they immediately came forward with great jubilation and picked him up. Purport: here's the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. Although the Rakshasi Putana could increase or decrease her bodily size by her mystic abilities and thus gain proportionate power, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is equally powerful in any transcendental form. Krishna is the real personality of Godhead because whether as a child or as a grown-up. Oh, this is an interesting book. 364, 461. Goes from page 364 to 461. Minor detail. Anyway, only about 150 pages are missing. 100 pages are missing.
The numbers that are.
It's not the numbers.
The pages are missing.
363, 64. Anyway, we're hearing about Vrindavan and Putana is of course one of the first demons to attack baby Krishna. Many demons come forward to kill, and this actually all took place some 5,000 years ago. But we're also taught something else. Where is Vrindavan? Anybody know where Vrindavan is? Who can say? Vrindavan is in your heart also. So we're going to read, we're going to go over some of the demons that present themselves before Lord Krishna, or Krishna within the heart, and how they are manifest. So, too late now. Thank you anyway. Yeah, alrighty. We'll reach that. Nostrils, eyes, grown up. Whether it's a grown up young man, he is the same person. He does not need to become powerful by meditation or any other external behavior. Therefore, when the greatly powerful Putana expanded her body, Krishna remained the same small child and fearlessly played on the upper portion of her breast. Sadaiswarya Purna Bhagavan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is always full of all potencies, regardless of whether he is present in this form or that. His potencies are always full. Prasya Shaktair Vividaiva Sruyate Svabhaviki Gyana Balakrucha. He can display all potencies under any circumstances. What are you doing? How are you going to do it on the... It's better, huh? I'm reminded a little bit about Hanuman. You know, in the Ramayana, Hanuman had to face increasing numbers of Rakshasas who were attacking him, first in the Ashoka Grove's garden, and then later on in the main battle. And what he did was he went on expanding the size of his body, and he got more and more power. So this is one of the abilities of Jiva souls who have some mystic power or are empowered by God. They have their limits. But Krishna did not have to expand his body to deal with Putana's proportionate increase in strength. As a little child, he could do anything. He could bewilder Brahma, he could defeat Trinavarta or so many demons, so many giant demons, Bakasura, just as a child. So it's another, there are many personalities described in the Vedic literatures, and many of them are certainly very wonderful, both demigods and asuras, and of course various incarnations of Krishna. But we are reminded again and again that Krishna Swayam Rupa Bhagavan is the original form of Godhead because of one of the four things that separates him from all other living beings, including Narayan, four things, and one of them is his exceptional pastimes. Very attractive, very wonderful, inconceivable, achintya. So, anyway, the anatomy of the cloud of anartha, as described in Madhurya Kadambini by Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Now we're going to have to go through this fairly quickly. If you want to ask any questions, then we have a Vrijabasi with us here today, Purnachandra Prabhu, so you can ask him questions. But we'll try to go through this. This was originally a seminar put together by Bhakti Chaitanya Maharaj, and very well done. He's taking the works of Vishwanath Chakravarti and Bhakti Vinod Thakur and Bhakti Siddhanta and other acharyas who were describing Vrindavan within our hearts, and these are the demons. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains that there are four types of anarthas recognized according to their origins. The first one is anarthas arising from previous sin. So there are different kinds of karma, prarabdha karma, which is coming to us in this lifetime. But we have a huge stockpile of karma waiting for us. At least I do. I always try to keep enough aside to take care of future contingencies. These are anarthas, this purva karma. One very fortunate thing is that by chanting the holy names of Krishna purely, you can immediately clean your slate. You can erase more sin than is possible to commit. But we should be aware that nothing goes unseen or unrecorded. Everything that we do is recorded. Big Brother is watching. And therefore we should always be very, very careful, because it simply presents difficulties in the future. Here's an interesting one. Anarthas arising from previous pious activities. So, you know, like charity, one would think that it's very charitable to say something in the mode of goodness, to help people, help little old ladies across the street, or get up to give in charity to some person who needs a meal, give them 10 marks or something. So that's certainly a good thing. It's a nice thing to do. You're giving them a donation. You don't know what they'll buy with that money. But out of the goodness of your heart, you're giving in charity. So that could be said to be charity in close to the mode of goodness. It depends on your attitude. If you are doing it for some name and fame, then it's passion. But if you're doing it without any thought for your own fame and fortune, then it could be goodness. Problem is, the person that you gave the 10 marks to now is a debtor. And that person has to repay you that 10 marks. And if they don't do it in this lifetime, then they'll have to take birth again. And guess what? You'll also have to take birth again to receive repayment. So, therefore, previous pious activities, they can be dangerous, and they are anarthas. We're not interested in the mode of goodness as a permanent residence. The mode of goodness is a platform from which we should go to the mode of Shuddha Sattva, pure goodness. Of course, before you can go to Shuddha Sattva, for the general mass of people, we have to get out of the Tamoguna. So goodness is a good start. You know, become human beings, please. And then we'll see about other things. Anarthas arising from imperfectly performed bhakti. Well, we know so much about so many rules. Deity worship, so many rules. Sadhu sangha, so many rules. Different types of bhakti, external sadhana, internal bhakti. There's lots of room for making mistakes. And anarthas arising from offenses in devotional service. Well, we know hatimata, the greatest offense of all offenses, is offense to a Vaishnava. And while performing devotional service, if we become lax, if we become lazy, complacent, dangerous, it becomes a habit, and whenever you meet a saintly person or you get some opportunity to come before Krishna in his deity form, because you won't get darshan of the Swayamrupa in a dirty condition, but you may have an opportunity to have the association of his Sagun form, the deity's Archa Vigraha. They are Krishna. It is Krishna, but it's Saguna. So therefore we can see. But if we treat the deities casually because of habits developed, very dangerous. Anarthas arising from previous sinful activities. There are 5 types of kleshas or material sufferings. Klesho dikataraste-sham avyakta-sakta-cetasam. 12th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna explains that there are many difficulties, kleshas, obstacles that we meet. So here's 5. Avidya, mistaking the impermanent to be permanent, or sub-religious principles, thinking that as dharma, being kind, being nice, being this, being that. The only thing we have to do is become attached to Krishna. The only person we have to please is our spiritual master and the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Now, of course, our spiritual master will advise us to do brahminical things, will advise us to be a gentleman. Prabhupada said that his disciples, his followers, would be recognized as perfect gentlemen. But we should know that we're not here to please society. We're not here to please anyone but Krishna and Guru and, of course, Vaishnavas. Asmita, false ego, bodily identification, and the tendency to accept sense perception. False ego. That's the point where the soul comes in touch with the material world, ahankar. The contact of the soul with matter. How do they interface? You've got spiritual energy and material energy, and they're juxtaposed. One is Satchitananda, one is Asadachitnirananda. How did they come together? False ego. The tendency to think that I am something that I'm not. The soul becomes bewildered. Raga, attachment, the desire for material happiness and the means to achieve it. So raga, raga is meant to be for Krishna. Raga, Raganuga, the followers of Lord Krishna, those who have attachment for the residents of Vrindavan, but falsely applied, attachment is a great anartha, and it can come from previous sinful activities and habitually getting our happiness, prayas, instant happiness, prayas, and not being aware of srayas, our ultimate state of happiness. Abhinivesha, acquired nature, absorption in bodily existence, including fear of death. Huh? Odvesha, hatred of happiness and the causes of it. Okay. Icha dvesha. We're all overcome by this dvesha. Hatred. It's interesting how we're overcome by the duality of desire and hatred. The moment we come into the material world. So here it's clarified. Hatred of what? Hatred of mundane unhappiness. Arjuna's biggest problem was that he was thinking in terms of his own happiness rather than thinking in terms of Krishna's happiness. I will not be happy if I fight in this war. I will be insulting my gurus. I will... No, what pleases Krishna? And have faith that by pleasing Krishna, you will automatically experience perfect happiness. Anarthas, or abhinivesha, acquired nature, absorption in bodily existence, including fear of death. Well, there are different kinds of fear. People are fearful, whether they acknowledge it or not. At the time of death, everyone has so many fears. Fears of losing what they had, fears of going into the unknown, fears of, in life, of being attacked by enemies. So many fears are there. Fear of being rejected, fear of loneliness, fear of loss of wealth, loss of health. So many fears are there. And they're all just below the surface. He's smiling, he's laughing, he's joking. But just below the surface, he's fearing more than any of the other things. He's fearing. Because he just doesn't know. He thinks he's got it under control, but he's seen before that the well-laid plans of men and mice, gang af baglai, they often go astray. He's seen that people's plans, plan making, is frustrated, is defeated. He's seen big people
who made big, big plans with big, big armies, and they're now big, big dead. So ignorance is this acquired nature, is an anartha. Anarthas arising from previous pious activities. Anarthas arising from previous pious activities are attachments to sattva gun, sense enjoyment, and mukti. Funny how people who do pious activities are sense gratifiers. One would think they're just from the core, so good. But actually, unfortunately, if you go deep into their psychology, they have a need to feel themselves as the doers of good. You know, so often I meet people in India, wealthy people, and they give some donation. Here, Swamiji, go and feed the poor people. As if, you know, the poor people can't exist without my blessings. And, of course, there are people who are desirous of liberation. Mukti, bhakti, siddhi, kami, shakali, yashanta. They're all kamis. Siddhi kami, mukti kami. They all have kama or desire, lust. So people who perform pious activities, they want mukti. And this is just another material desire. The devotee, nadanam, najanam, nasundarim, kavitam, vajagadisha, kamaye, mama, janmani, janmanishvare. I don't even desire liberation. No desire, only to please you. That's the only condition of being desire-free, is when you have a desire to please Krishna. Anarthas arising from the improper performance of bhakti. Anarthas arising from improper performance of devotional service are a little more subtle. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says that just as along with the main plant many weeds grow, similarly by the cultivation of bhakti, there appears acquisition of material wealth and other facilities, worship and respect by others, a comfortable position, fame, etc. By their very nature, they have the power to influence the heart of a devotee, grow in size, and cover up the main plant intended for cultivation, bhakti. So, that's a pretty revealing insight. Look at that one and read that one again. Why don't you read that one for us again? Read it. Yeah? It's not up there on the machine? Anarthas arising from...
No, it's the second part.
Oh.
By their very nature.
Yeah. Okay,
Anarthas arising from improper performance of devotional service are a little more subtle. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says that just as along with the main plant many weeds grow, similarly by the cultivation of bhakti, there appears acquisition of material wealth and other facilities, worship and respect by others, a comfortable position, fame, etc. By their very nature, they have the power to influence the heart of the devotee, grow in size, and cover up the main plan intended for cultivation, bhakti.
Yeah, okay. Cut a bit, I need to hear it again. Could you read it? Huh? Huh? Yeah, it's so important.
Anarthas arising from the proper performance of devotional service is a little more subtle. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says that just as among the main type, many reads, similarly by the cultivation of the bhakti, there appear acquisition of material wealth and other facilities, worship and respect to others, a comfortable position, and so on. Very nature, they have the power to influence the heart of his very growing size and cover up the main plant.
Punachandra, you have a strong voice.
One more time.
One more time. Let's hear it.
Oh, I wanted to just mention something, kind of like a question, but so we're hearing how, along with the main plant, the weeds grow, and a person, because he performs bhakti, he develops his material acquisitions, wealth, comfortable position, fame, because bhakti is attractive and people offer him money and he gets, you know, these various things. So.
Well, you know what? We teach people to offer these things.
Yeah, okay, there's nothing wrong with that. That's good. That's good for them. And then the person, you know, who's receiving them, then he has to be careful. But what we're saying is that the anarthas, so the definition of improperly performed bhakti then is that when a person becomes mainly focused on those side things instead of his seva to the Lord and to Guru, and then he's performing these activities which seem like bhakti, and they may be even directly, you know, activities of bhakti, but because his main focus is on these other things, therefore it's improperly performed bhakti.
Right.
Right?
Yeah, I would say also that even if his focus is on bhakti, if it's not a very strong focus, in other words, he has no malified intentions, but just in the course of acquiring opulences, he becomes bewildered. Even a man of vipaschita, even a man of discrimination can be carried away. So I think it's a point that one has to constantly hear, so that it's drummed home. Anyway, it goes along with what you're saying, but I'm very fearful of this because I've seen a lot, and I feel it myself, the tendency to get carried away by opulence, although I don't have a lot of opulence, but still, I can see with whatever little I have, you may be focusing on bhakti, but if you acquire atyahara, if you acquire too much, and you're not able to completely utilize it in the service of, in your preaching service or whatever. And I see examples that some people would question, even within our own institution. Okay, we'll go on. One should carefully note that these do not include seva aparadas. So, seva aparada, as opposed to the improper performance of bhakti, I'm not sure what that means, what the distinction is. Not clear, but anarthas arising from offenses. Anarthas arising from offenses in devotional service are the ten offenses against the chanting of the holy names. To blaspheme devotees who've dedicated their lives to the propagation of the holy name of the Lord. To consider the demigods to be equal to or independent of Vishnu. To disobey one's spiritual master. To blaspheme the Vedic or related scriptures. To consider the glories of chanting the holy name to be imagination. To give some mundane interpretation on the holy name.
to commit sin on the strength of, everybody does this, to commit sin on the strength of the holy name. I think it should be to commit sin on the strength of chanting the holy name, but anyway. But I see that everywhere. Everybody said that. Number one and number seven, they are generally considered to be the most grievous sins, the most dangerous offenses against the holy name. The others are also offenses against the chanting, but if you commit hatimata, you cannot get relief except from the person who you've offended. Krishna won't give you relief. And also, if you commit sin on the strength of chanting, then you lose your taste and respect for chanting. And once you lose your taste and respect for chanting, the only remedial measure is chanting. The only prayaschitta that has any value is chanting. To consider the chanting of Hare Krishna to be a karma kandya activity, to preach the glories of the holy name to the faithless, to not have complete faith in the chanting of the holy names, and to maintain material attachments even after hearing so many instructions in this matter, is also an offense to be inattentive while chanting. Well, of all of these, I think 9 and 10 are quite progressive for many devotees suffer from 9 and 10, especially preachers. There's the tendency to augment one's own prestige by presenting philosophy which is both beyond our realization what to speak of the people we're preaching to. Theoretically, they may understand that this is a very deep and detailed philosophy, and they may become impressed with us temporarily, but no real change takes place in their heart, and preaching has a wonderful effect of helping you to depend totally on Krishna, to become Krishna's via media transfer. If you think that you are the preacher, you have made a big mistake. And therefore, if Krishna wants to present a simple argument to someone, and even at the risk your consideration that this person won't be impressed by this simple argument, still you have to preach according to your own realization and according to Krishna's dictation. You cannot co-opt preaching. Krishna is the preacher. And then, of course, not have complete faith. That's important, very, very important. Maintain material attachments. We hope by chanting they'll be cut down. But I think inattentive while chanting. There is a science to chanting. We already discussed this. I think maybe not. But I have gotten some good advices from some good chanters, and I'll pass them along to you. One thing you can do to improve your rounds is to spend 15 minutes before you even start your rounds in the morning reading some books like Harinam Chintamani. There are other good books by some of my god brothers, Gaura-Govinda Maharaj, and translations of different books on the glories of the holy name, and then even to meditate on some people that you know, either extant or from the past, who have attachment for chanting, And then by the time you start your own chanting, your mind will already be in the right mood to chant. And it is good to give attention to the details of how and where and when you chant. For example, Bhaktivinoda Thakur said that one can, if one is distracted, one can block his ears. Or one can throw a chadar over his eyes and chant, so that you're able to be attentive to the chanting. That doesn't mean because you close your eyes or put earplugs in that you will. Only the mind is very powerful. It can escape earplugs and chatters over the eyes. But still, if there's a little bit of help there, listen to a tape of Prabhupada chanting, whatever it takes, don't be inattentive. Falling asleep during japa, go and take rest until you're feeling refreshed, and then come and chant. If that means you have to sleep for 15 hours a day, well, then you better go and see a doctor. Seva aparajas do not fit in this category because they are normally overcome in the course of the performance of one's devotional service due to the potency of devotional activities or through some activities specifically performed for their nullification, to make them, nullification means to wipe them out, to erase them, to null, make them null, nil. However, if one commits seva aparaj knowingly, that becomes the seventh offense against the chanting of the holy names. A person who commits Namaparad loses the mercy of the Lord in the form of his name and therefore suffers in many ways. But if such a person humbly takes the appropriate remedial methods for his offenses, there are recommended remedies for each of the 10 types, then he is able to gradually get the mercy of the name again and his diseased condition is relieved. The removal of anarthas. According to Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, there are 5 grades of eradication of anarthas. Limited eradication, in other words, one anartha. Pervasive, affecting many anarthas. General, complete, and absolute. I don't know much about that. In the case of anarthas arising from nama-aparad, the rate of nullification is as follows. On the level of bhajana-kriya, the eradication is limited. On nishta, the eradication is pervasive. On the level of bhava, the eradication is general. At prema, the eradication is complete, and at the attainment of the Lord's lotus feet, the eradication is absolute. So as you take up the process of bhakti yoga, as you chant nicely your rounds, there will be a gradual cleansing of all your anarthas, and they will take place as it is described here. It gets more intense as you advance. When one is at the stage, the beginning stage of chanting and associating with devotees and engaging in his first type of devotional service, he may be cleansing his sins or his anarthas, but it will be limited. But when he comes to the point of firm faith, that faith will help him to go deeper. Anarthas are like roots of a banyan tree in the sense that some of the roots of a banyan tree go deep into the ground, or if not down, along. In other words, they're quite big roots. So some of our anarthas are deeply rooted. We don't realize it. If you have a tooth problem. You go to a dentist and the tooth is getting totally destroyed, you will have to have a root canal done. The dentist has got to take out the root. Now, root canal is one of the most painful operations that a dentist does, because he literally digs a big hole in your gum to get the root out. And, you know, sometimes they pull it out and blah, you know, you need a lot of Novocaine. I wonder what they did before drugs. I mean, you know, you hear stories of tying a string to your tooth and then putting the string on a door and then shutting the door. Sitting you in a chair, tying you in a chair and slamming the door. But these sins that we have, anarthas that we have, we should not minimize them or think that we have achieved complete perfection. Perfection will be attained when you come to the point of prema bhakti. Even at the point of bhava, we see that Bharat Maharaj still had some anartha left. And bhava is like the awakening of love of God. It's the first stage of pure love of God, the sunrise. But it's not the full form of the sun. Anarthas arising from previous sin or piety are eradicated as follows. And that's all described there. So, anyway, as I said, these Vrindavan is there about 90 miles south of Delhi. And I think it's 90 miles, right? 130 kilometers or something. And I encourage everyone to go there. And if you have first done some, in other words, some people might think that I'll go to Vrindavan and get purified. There's some truth in that, but you may not be able to see Vrindavan in an impure state. You may benefit from being in the region, but it is good to try to kill the demons in your heart. Then you will be able to actually see Boma, Vrindavan. You'll be able to see Gokula, Vrindavan. Otherwise, it's just like any other village in UP. It's becoming more and more commercialized. It's fairly dirty. And for many Westerners, it would be considered a place not to go. Let's just go to Agra and see the Taj Mahal, you know. So please do take a trip to Vrindavan, and before you go there, stop in Bombay, say hello. Hare Krishna. It's my swan song. Hope we'll see you again. Can't say, there's a possibility sometime next year. Can't say. Don't know. Hare Krishna. Amen.